Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're back here again after the Pro Tour. We want to give a big shout-out to Raymond, future pro, Perez Jr. for placing 37th. He went back again. He crushed it. He got silver. So he's going to be going to Pro Tour Atlanta, Journey into Knicks. So, you know, shout-out there to Raymond. We got to let everyone know for the Brainstorm family. So, yeah.
Yeah, Ray.
So shout out there. I guess he's not playing Merfolk. I thought he was playing Merfolk, but I guess he made a last bit of audible.
Yeah, he said he had a lot of trouble against Anger of the Gods in testing, and that's why he chose to play Pod.
But there was a lot of Anger of Gods there. If you look at Aaron Forsythe, he said that was what the most played card in the cycle.
Yeah, either the most or the second most played card. It was kind of ridiculous.
Well, I had a friend who'd been playing it in the sideboard of Jund for a while, and like every time we talked about it, we talked about how strong it was. But it was interesting to see that, you know what, it just became like the thing to go to last weekend.
Yeah, it takes care of Pod. I mean, you gotta get rid of those kitchen finks, they're pestering, and you just wipe down the board for the most part in Affinity.
I'm not sure what the next, like, evolution is to beat Anger of the Gods, but I have some ideas, so.
What's that? What's your ideas?
Well, I'm saving it for Pick of the Week.
Alright, well, let's go into Pick of the Week.
That was a real anticlimactic, yeah.
Alright, well, fuck it then. If we just wanna go to the Pick of the Week.
We'll come back to the Pro Tour. We can give it some more time.
But we can't just start Pick of the Week willy-nilly whenever you feel like it.
I could do whatever the fuck. I can't say that, huh?
I said it too.
Come on, guys. It's me that's supposed to say the fuck word and get us in trouble.
No, we should really just actually cut that and go back to where Marcel's.
This is so unprofessional.
And so what's your Pick of the Week? It's the Pick of the Week!
We have music that's better than that.
It's time for the Pick of the Week.
If you look at the decks that did well, a lot of them were playing Counterspells and Anger of the Gods. Or, you know, other 3-mana stuff, like obviously Lightning Bolt, or 3-damage stuff, Lightning Bolt, Lightning Helix. A card that is positioned to really take advantage of a format like that is Thrun, the Last Troll. It's a mythic from an older set, it hasn't really seen a big price increase, and it is very well positioned against a lot of the red-white-blue tinged decks, you know, like the Blue Moon even, that did well last week, and it's in a great position against all of those, so that's what I'm looking at.
I like Thrun. Honestly, I think the 4 mana casting cost is just too much for Modern.
What does a red white blue deck do against it? They're not playing Wraths.
Yeah, but all the other decks, like you got Affinity, you got Storm, and you got Scapeshift, you got Twin. It's just like, what is he really doing? Like he does good against some things and that red white blue deck, but everything else he's just like at 4 mana. What if he gets remanded? Oh, he can't get remanded.
Can't get targeted. Can't get Supreme Verdicted. Literally dodges all the removal.
Yeah, well, they can get Supreme Verdicted.
No.
You gotta have mana to regenerate him.
But the point is those decks aren't even playing Supreme Verdict. Because all their like other point removal is so good and he just gets around all of it.
Yeah,
and
but Zoo just runs right through him. Like by the time you get to turn 4, like you're
Zoo didn't do anything.
Yeah, but that it's just against the field. But I mean, I like Thrun. I really do. I just think it's too slow at 4, honestly.
Do the big Zoo decks not start playing him? Because Zoo, if it wants to be viable, has to find a way to beat those cards. So like Noble Hierarch into turn 3 Thrun is probably a pretty solid way to go about it. I mean, I don't know. The main draw to it is that it's a mythic from a pretty old set. So if it starts to go, it's going to go really fast and really high. And the upside on it, I think, vastly outweighs the downside. And the other way of looking at it is, you know, what is going to make that card come down in price in the next 6 months? It hasn't come down in price in, you know, since it left standard. The downside is just very little.
You know what? That's fair. I agree with you on that. I think he's a good pickup, even though he may not be like just out of the world and just be a major format dominating, but price wise, he'll be good.
Okay, this is a pick that I don't have much confidence in, so this will be fun. I'm already distancing myself from it. Okay, so there's a card that has a word in its name that if that word is in it, the card is worth money.
Mox.
Lotus.
No, close. The word is Lotus. Lotus Bloom. Oh. Lotus Bloom featured heavily in the Ad Nauseam combo deck. We're gonna get into like why some of the decks spiked weird, the weird price spikes this weekend. We're gonna get into that later, but for right now, just know that there was some combo and some decks that did okay at the PT, and the cards in them, even if they've gone up before, really went nuts. So there's this Ad Nauseam combo deck where you use Angel's Grace. Angel's Grace is not a bad pickup around two, but that's not my pick. You use Angel's Grace so you don't die when you Ad Nauseam and draw your whole deck, and then you just like, you know, combo them out. So,
how does that deck win, Jason?
I don't know what what it is. I just know that you draw your whole deck.
Okay, well, it uses Lightning Storm usually.
Okay, great. Thanks. That was real relevant finance info. Anyway, you want to be picking up, I think, Lotus Bloom. Now, this is a card that was printed in Modern Masters, and the price really suffered. But this is going to be a 4-of in the combo decks that run it. It says Lotus in it. I think $3-4 is really cheap for this, even with the reprint in Modern Masters, because as we saw, that didn't add quite as many copies as people thought. And I think the price is low artificially. So I think that is a really good pickup. But since I've already said I have no confidence in it, and I'm trying to distance myself from it, if it goes nowhere, just pretend I said Vettelkin Shackles. Because Vettelkin Shackles is in the exact same boat. It did really well in the Blue Moon deck. It's a solid card. And it was in Modern Masters as well, and the price went down. And I think those two cards are due for a correction because they're getting played in Modern. They aren't as splashy, but I think they're solid role players, and I think those are just going to go up incrementally. It's probably a long haul. You know, I like those quick flips, but I think these are a long haul. So the Vettelkin Shackles you'd buy now to play with because it's going to take a while for you to see a return, but I think cheaply you can get in on Lotus Bloom and just sit on them. So that's my pick of the week is Lotus Bloom.
Well, they actually shot up on Moto, so anyone wants to get in. They went from 50 cents not too long ago to about 250. But I mean, there's still probably room for growth on that.
Oh, man. Speaking of Moto, I just realized, like, all these cards I bought from Modern Masters. When you mentioned Lotus Bloom, I looked them up. Those are up there. And Knight of the Reliquary is, too. It's $4 a piece now. I think I'm going to sell mine out.
Yeah. It's too bad Knight didn't really do as much as I would have hoped. Knight did more in Legacy this weekend, I think.
I think it's just important to note that a lot of these Modern cards that have been sitting at bulk on Moto have actually proceeded to go up in the past, I guess, probably just week.
There's a lot of interest in Modern, yeah. I mean, it's a PT spike.
I mean, yeah, PT will do that. Who else wants to go? Because I want to talk about the PT, actually.
All right, so my pick of the week is going to be a long-term one, and I think this is a post-rotation thing. So once we get into this next set, I think they already announced it, did they? Maddie Studios said something about some name they gave out.
Vintage Masters, is that what you're...
No, I'm talking about the next set, the next block.
Oh, they were saying something about the con of, I don't know, it's not Eldrazi. And that's all I know that I'm just
saying. Oh, Vorthos Ryan was wrong.
No, not necessarily though. See, the thing
Vorthos
is,
Vorthos Ryan got it wrong.
Hold
I
on, not necessarily.
Zendegod was going to be battling with Eldrazi.
Listen, I still think there's a potential for that. Here's why. Just now got the trademark for this recently. And if you look at most of the trademarks, from what I understand, they usually get at least a year in advance. And this seems really late for me. I think we may be seeing the trademark for the set after that.
Oh.
I think that there's still a chance that the next set is, in fact, Eldrazi.
I'm going to call it now. Teen Colorless Mana, Planeswalker, Emrakul.
Well, I guess while we're on the subject, I wouldn't be surprised. Another thing, Lenny, and I don't think I've talked about this on the cast. Have I about Guild being a plant? The card Guild in Born of the Gods that gives you an 01 colorless artifact token that adds one mana of any color to your pool.
It doesn't make a creature, it's just a gold token, I thought.
Yeah, it's not actually a creature, it's one of the first tokens they've ever had.
I think it could be a plant, that's possible.
Like, yeah, I think so.
The gold thing was, I believe, in one of the submissions for the Great Designer Search, the Great Designer Search 2. And it just seems really weird for a card that, if it's just thrown in, it's just a weird card to be by itself.
Yeah, but I think that's like an homage. Like, how well did that guy do in the Great Designer Search? Like, they're not going to do a whole keyword mechanic out of Guild, but they can do it as like a throwaway homage and give a bad limited set with no removal a little bit more removal.
But there's a lot of things to look at, but I mean, it does make sense to help you cast Eldrazi, even, you know, if that's going to be a thing. It's kind of one of those things that goes to help.
Okay, Corbin, let's make a bet. Let's make a bet. If there's no Guild as a mechanic, you have to wear a tinfoil hat for an entire day at work.
I'm not going to. You know what? I'll agree to that. I work out of my house.
You gotta stream it. We gotta at least get pictures like that. Live stream it or live tweet it or something. We gotta see
the
tweet.
Sure. I will make that bet.
Alright.
Excellent.
Perfect. It's great, Jason. I love it. Alright, so I'm gonna move on to my-
I will join Corbin with us, actually. Not with the Guild thing, but I'm still thinking the next block's gonna have Eldrazi in it, or have some Eldrazi influence. I don't know that we'll necessarily be on Zendikar, but there will be something Eldrazi related.
Okay, Ryan, let's make a bet. If you're right about that, I will say I don't care, just like when Xenagos was announced as a god.
I'll guarantee.
I mean, that's fine, but-
I'll guarantee that Eldrazi are coming. One form or another, whatever product it's in, it's, they're coming again.
Well, yeah, that's a duh right there. That's what I'm saying.
I'm putting that in not a very long time span.
Yeah, I'm betting they're in Modern Masters too. And that's the Eldrazi we get. That is my bet.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, we're getting it before then for sure.
Yeah.
We're getting it before next fall, I think.
I'll bet you turkey bell, Ryan.
Alright, I bet we're getting Eldrazi this year. Before the end of this calendar year.
Before the end of 2014 as a calendar year?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I will take that bet. I'm betting the Eldrazi we get are on Modern Masters 2.
And so what's the bet? What are you guys gonna get? You gotta wager something.
I mean, Turkeyville's on the
loser
line.
Loser buys winner Turkeyville.
Yeah, I'm pretty good with that. No one else knows what that is, but believe me, it's worth it.
All right, and you guys got to live tweet that too. So, something for the listeners. The listeners are going to get something out of both of these bets, and they're going to win. That's the main key of it.
The listeners should have to pick a side, and they only get a prize if the person that they backed wins.
I like it.
Sure. So let's move on to my pick of the week, since you guys are done talking about that. This is a long-term spec, I think, post-rotation. It's going to be the Flame Wreath Phoenix. This is the mythic from Born of the Gods. Right now it's 173 on Moto and paper is 475, so I don't know. But that's the Phoenix that keeps coming back. I think at like $1.50.
Marcel, all Phoenixes keep coming back.
Yeah, I knew somebody was going to say that.
Do you want me to read this card?
No, just want to give the listeners information about stuff.
This is the tribute Phoenix.
Don't tell them how the deck we're talking about wins. That's irrelevant.
No, Snapcaster Mage is a one colorless and one blue mana 2/1 creature with flash. And when it comes into play.
Everyone knows as much as Jason. Don't explain anything.
So Flame Breathe Phoenix is a 2 red for a 3/3 flying tribute to. And when it comes into play, if you don't pay tribute, it comes back. It basically returns to your hand when it dies. I think right now this format is not so good. I think once that's crazy.
For our listeners, what is tribute?
Tribute is what happens when Jason grovels at my knees when he sees the foie gras sandwich in my hand at GP.
Foie gras sandwich.
Shut the f*** up. You did. I can fit that in there, right? That's PG-13.
Why even do that? A goat's a goose suffered, was force-fed nuts its whole life until its liver exploded and it died. So you could put it on a sandwich like it's a piece of bologna.
There's actually humane ways of doing foie gras that's not that necessarily.
It's just goose liver pate. It's not real.
It's not the same way. It may not be the same way, but they is actually one. And in a foie gras competition that they won without doing a force feed.
Is that guy in Spain?
Yeah.
I heard about him on TED because I'm a giant liberal.
Yeah. So it's completely possible. I'm now not saying the one that I'm going to be eating is that kind. I'm pretty sure it's going to be probably the force fed one. But shit, you only live life a couple times. And if I'm going to be somewhere where the French people are, you know, they get down with the foie gras, I'm going to definitely have some of that.
I'm not going to put it on a sandwich though.
I want to put it in my mouth.
Marcel's not picking.
I don't care what it's.
Jason, you just pick it. Alright, so now we're picking.
Yeah, I don't care what vehicle is carrying it. I'm just going to eat it.
Marcel, do you have a pick of the week? You're just leading us on.
Yeah, no, so I'm saying the Phoenix. I think the Phoenix is not well positioned right now in this format, especially with Desecration Demon out. And I think once we get the post-rotation, the cost is very aggressive for what you get. And I think that there's a place for it. And at $2 or under $2 right now, that's about pretty much bulk for Mythic on Moto. So there's a lot of upside for it. And paper, I don't know, maybe at $5 is probably decent to trade into. But I think there's potential for this post-rotation. This is not going to do anything until then.
I like it. Let's see. So that leaves it on me. Oh, man. I think you should sell some Eldrazi cards because they're going to be reprinted.
Do you think all of them?
No.
What about new Eldrazi?
No, actually, like, I think really the pick of the week this week for me is for people to remember that these cards that, you know, didn't necessarily see the modern play are definitely on their way down. You have a lot of these pieces of fairies that spiked up way too high. And, you know, we're seeing some of them come down already, but anything that you're left with, you definitely want to get out of now. The market, as we've seen in the past, does readjust. And yes, it seems like modern, unlike standard. Like standard, you typically have these price creeps that go up, and then it continues to see more play, but the cards are so opened that the price never really has a chance to go too high. Modern, on the other hand, because there's a limited amount on the internet right away, once those are bought out, people just, you know, sky's the limit for a price, and then it has to come back down. And you're really going to have to, you know, evaluate throughout this modern season because the price spikes are not going to stop. You just have to make sure that on the back end of any price spike, especially if you didn't buy into it but you just happen to have copies of it, get out while you can on anything that's not seeing any immediate amount of play. And anything that is still seeing play, it's probably going to go higher. I mean, that's just been the way that we've seen the market trending for modern. I don't know if that's going to continue, you know, into next season or so, but I would say through this year, you're definitely going to continue to see a lot of these cards shooting way up and then taking a little while to cool off, but once they start to, the price will plummet on them.
That's why I like that. And I'm a fan of the staple stuff that you kind of look over just because it's not drawing the headlines. But, you know, like your past exiles, do we think the price is going to go down on those? No. I mean, like, that sort of stuff just seems, you know, very safe to get into with the modern season just a couple months ahead of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Solid picks of the week this time. I think everyone's so strong. I'm going to erase that. It sound like I was chewing while trying to speak. This dinner's hella good. Well, anyway, all right, so let's talk about the Pro Tour. Let's jump into that. So we had another great Pro Tour. Twin was represented three of the spots in the top eight, even though there were some different versions of Twin. It was ultimately won by Red, White, Blue Control, or is it Flash? What would it be considered? We had a pod deck. We had a storm deck in there. There's Blue Moon, a new deck, which is a mono blue control deck with Blood Moon. How awesome is that, honestly?
I thought
that was genius. And you've seen a bunch of different stuff in the format, but what you didn't see is many fairy decks doing well, even though some fairy decks that did play did day two on a high percentage of them, I believe, more than 50%. But so it was an interesting Pro Tour. I think the coverage was actually a bit better this time. I feel that people had their roles.
I do have to say, though, before we go any further, I've heard a number of people make this, and, like, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily what you would call a mistake, but kind of evaluate the format incorrectly as far as day two goes. What you have to understand is, like, to make day two in the Pro Tour, you only have to go 4-4. And if you go 4-4 that and you 3-0 your draft five, you can go 1-5 or 1-4 in constructed. And that is, like, there's a lot of constructed decks that come out of day one, and because their limited game carried them, it makes it look like the constructed matchup, or the constructed deck did a lot better than it did. And I think that's why you see these decks like fairies, where, you know, a high percentage of them may have day two, but all of a sudden they just look like they're completely bombing. And it's not necessarily that, but
yeah,
they could have
1-4'd constructed.
Right, it's like Corbin, actually you did the exact same thing earlier, during the Pro Tour you were saying, I see that, you know, Ray's tiebreaks were bad, so it means that he's obviously doing well in the constructed rounds. Well, and he actually went 2-1 in the limited rounds, and then it just happened to be his opponents were bad. But I mean, if you look at his record with Merfolk, or with, Pod, I guess, he went,
5-3-1?
5-4-1, right? No.
5-3-1.
Yeah, no, because there's 10 rounds of constructed. It's 5-4-1.
There's 16 rounds in the tournament? I thought there were 15.
No, it's 8-8. It's 3-5 and 3-5.
Yeah, 10 rounds of constructed.
Okay. Yeah. If we're talking about, you know, evaluating decks, the best thing to evaluate, all right, is the list of decks that went 6-3 or better, 18 points or more.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's really really what's important there is like the conversion rate, to see how many of the, you know, people were playing those decks and then what percentage of them went 6-3 or better is actually probably the most useful tool for analyzing that.
On that note, I also must say, as a friend of Ray, it is quite entertaining to me that he has managed to 11-1 his total limited rating, or total limited matches on the Pro Tour, considering that, I mean, he'll even tell you himself, he is by no means a limited expert, and I'm not quite sure how he's getting there on that, but pretty happy for him. But maybe it's definitely helped him carry through, because if you look at both his constructed showings, which he's, you know, very good at and practices a lot, they're actually not that great. He's nearly broken even about 50% both times.
Maybe it's just if you don't practice the archetype, you know, with drafting, and you go in there with these preconceived notions that you actually do better, and you just pick, you know.
Well, I think there's actually merit to that, because when I was watching the coverage, you watch the guys who were drafting, and I mean, even the commentators said it, you know, they talked about how each person had these archetypes they were willing to draft. Well, that's not the way to go into draft. I mean,
forcing some archetypes.
I was sitting there watching the draft, and I mean, not to say I'm a great player by any means, but I used to definitely be better at limited than constructed. And I'm watching these guys make these picks that are just absolutely incorrect just to attempt to stay, you know, on color or whatnot. And that, I don't know if they had just forced themselves into this idea that, you know, that's the best, that's what they have to play or what, but it was definitely,
why it's so hard. I think those people got punished. Like, I feel like if you were able to just draft what was open, you'd do a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely agree with that.
I don't know. I think if I were on camera and like they were discussing every one of my draft picks, I would probably want to pick an archetype, because like if I abandon an archetype four picks in, like I do all the time, like I'd be like, oh yep, he's not taking a white card here. What do you think's going on? Oh, I have no idea what he's doing. He took Nihilia's presence, and I don't know what's going on.
I assume people drafting in the Pro Tour don't like what the commentators are saying effectively.
No, they don't listen to what the commentators are saying, but like they are aware that, like, if you're being profiled, you're aware that they're looking at all your picks, and that's just, it's gotta be nerve-wracking. You probably don't want to do anything risky.
I don't agree with that at all. I was actually in that position. I have an 8-man pod where they did coverage on my pod in the Pro Tour. That's not at all a factor. There's a person standing behind you writing down your picks.
There's a person standing behind everybody, but I'm talking about, like, I was watching Huey Jensen draft, and they were talking about every card Huey was taking. It was, like...
There's no way. Those guys do not get camera shy about this stuff.
Don't even understand what I'm saying.
Have
you ever watched Finkel do a draft? That man picks some of the craziest shit, and you know what he does? He wins his draft.
Well, Finkel's different. He's a limited savant.
Do you really think they're going to go to the Pro Tour, and because they're on camera, they're not going to pick an optimal?
It's not about being on camera. It's about, like, I don't know.
That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. They're trying to win. They're not there to be salesman.
They're just going
to
do what makes some money.
Okay, forget I f***ing said anything. Yep, oh, I said the f***ing word. I guess you got to cut it all.
Yep, that's not going to be in there.
Good. Cut all of that. It was not a good podcast at all.
We're just going to beep. And that's what I'm going to do. It's going to be the beep cast.
Oh, so while it's beeped out, Scott Pacer just hit me up on Twitter, and he wants to know if we want to spoil a card, and I think he's emailing it to me right now.
Yes.
Yes? Who is this?
Boost Cube.
Oh, nice.
So financially, what came out of the Pro Tour that was a big thing? We had
a bunch of stuff that already spiked in March 2013. Okay, so in March 2013, Azusa was a $4 card because of EDH, right? It was a bulk rare, and then it's good in EDH, so Azusa became a $4 card. That is the price that EDH sustained. Then they had that deck was like, oh, we're using Azusa to put out bounce lands with Amulet of Vigor. Amulet of Vigor went from bulk to like $1.50. Azusa went from 4 to like 12, and, you know, that was the deck. The exact same deck, card for card, came out this time around, and everyone's like, yeah, I think it's pretty reasonable for Azusa to hit 30. And I said, no way. Does Azusa hit 30? I'm not in at 15. If this goes up, it'll go up to 20. And it actually hit 30. Like, I was 100% wrong about that, just because I'm like, look, last time this deck came out, it wasn't that great. Nobody played it for, like, the whole year it's been since this was a deck last. No one's talking about it because it's not even a tier 3 deck. And it's like, oh, well, a good player's playing it on the Pro Tour, so I guess everyone's going to run out and build it. I have no idea why Azusa hit 30, and it's already on its way back down to where it was. But, people in the short term made money.
The only thing that this version had going for that the others didn't is it had the backup plan of Hive Mind. So maybe there's some people who didn't like it before who would say, oh, maybe now it's a real thing. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. That price will probably hold somewhat steady. Not at 30, obviously, but 20 is probably reasonable.
I actually would be surprised if it holds steady at 30, and I've noticed a lot of the cards that do hold, that even if they don't see competitive play, are casual staples. Like, a lot of times, anytime that's something like, that's an EDH card, if it spikes, it usually stays there.
I mean, EDH demand made it a $4 card. So I don't see EDH propping it up above, like, the 12 it was. Like,
you wouldn't think so, but because it's hit this price now, and someone's willing to buy it at that price for their commander deck, that's suddenly the new price for it, no matter what else it does.
Yeah,
like, that's
so,
just how these cards have worked. I don't know why, but...
But here's the deal. What you gotta think is, like, yeah, if it hits 30, the people that are selling on Friday night got $30. Okay? The people that listed their copies for sale when TCG Player was bought out. And how hard was that? There were probably 40 copies on TCG Player. Somebody spent $500, TCG Player's out, and then they relisted them for 30. I guess they're 30. But if you bought them at 20, and you were hoping to relist them for 30, by the time they get shipped to you, like today, probably, when the cast goes out today, which is Friday, you're probably getting them in the mail today or yesterday, you're not going to be able to list them for more than, like, $20, I don't think. So spending 15 to make 3 after fees seems really miserable to me. So that's why I said no, but if you had them, you absolutely sell into that hype. But I still don't think it was correct to buy at 15, even though we saw it hit 30, because I don't think anyone that bought at 15 is going to see 30. I think they will see 20 maybe.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
The same thing with, and another thing that bothered me was people were surprised that Amulet of Vigor went up. They're like, that's a bulk rare. Amulet of Vigor spiked twice already. Ryan knows this. Ryan had a box of them on the floor. Where were you? When, like, I think it was Channel Fireball made that Bounce Land deck with Cloud Post. They had that Cloud Post deck before Cloud Post got banned in Modern with Amulet of Vigor.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you had a bunch of them in a box, just bulk. Like, Amulet of Vigor spiked then, and then it spiked in March 2013 with the same Azusa shenanigans with Bounce Lands. So, like, Amulet of Vigor has spiked twice, and people were still surprised. People still thought it was a bulk rare. So, I don't know, maybe you picked that up.
Yeah, I can see that.
So we could move into some more financial stuff, but I actually kind of want to break up the podcast a little bit, if you guys don't mind. We actually have some spoilers for Booze Cube 2.0, if you guys wanted to go into that.
Oh, let's do this. Booze Cube! So, what's up, Scott? We're going to actually have him as a guest in a future episode, so look forward to that.
Scott is a cool guy. I got to play the actual Booze Cube. I got to be in a pod where I forced a guy to drink so much he vomited on the actual booze cube. That was a great honor.
You're really cool, Jason. I have more respect for you after telling that story.
I watched a guy throw up on the cards. It was that was cool. I didn't party too hard. I'm an adult. I know how to drink alcohol.
In moderation. I just played serious Magic because I wanted to win, and I barely drank. And my opponents didn't drink that much, and it was a very quiet, serious game, and I stomped people in.
Well, I have more respect for you for being boring and not know how to party in Las Vegas. Yeah. Okay, so I got four cards here that Scott sent me. The first one is a pirate equipment that is blue. It costs two colors and a blue.
Let me see this card. Where's it at? I gotta see this.
I will forward you the email, okay? This card is called Swashbuckler.
You're gonna have to send it so that we could talk about it, because I can't visualize anything.
Hang on, let me forward the email then. Hang on. So the first card, like I said, is called Swashbuckler, and if that offends you, I guess never list to us again. Like I said, pirate equipment, two colors and a blue.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
The equipped creature.
Hold on.
Come on.
Oh, you had to say Swashbuckler.
I didn't make the card. You can say Swashbuckler if you're reading it, right?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Anyway, Swashbuckler. F***le is not a word. You can say f***le all you want.
Oh my god.
You can say f***le in court to a judge, and the judge would be like, oh, that's legit, ooh.
I think it was the, if that offends you, don't listen to us. That...
Oh, yeah, f***le him.
Awesome.
Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has flying. If it's a pirate, creatures you control have boost touch. That sounds really powerful if you know anything about the boost cube. If you speak a sentence that doesn't contain profanity, sacrifice Swashbuckler.
Oh my god.
That sounds like lots of fun when you're drinking. Here we go. Fake ID. Three colors, two blue for a blue instant. Yes, it's two blue mana for a blue instant. I mentioned that twice. You may take a shot and discard a blue card rather than pay fake ID's mana cost. You may choose new targets for target spell. So it's sort of like a force of will slash, I don't know, metal slash deflection. It's pretty good. Oh, here's a good one. Here's a land. It is a plain swamp called Pedophile's Parish. Pedophile's Parish enters the battlefield tapped. She drink three.
It has a f***ing lollipop in his hand. That is ridiculous.
Oh, and it doesn't say anywhere that it taps for white or black mana. I'm assuming that it does.
Yeah, it's the ability swamp. To
it's a plain
yeah.
swamp.
Well, I'm sorry. Planes say they tap for mana.
Yeah. Well, no, they just have a big mana symbol on it.
Well, they do now. Okay. You haven't been playing since Revised like me.
Yes, I have.
Oh, my God.
I played in Revised. They had a tap symbol initially, but they don't have them anymore. So you don't need to have it. So it's like saying Oracle text. The cards don't have nothing.
I like the next card.
Okay, this fourth one, Loxodon on Brohammer. A colorless and three white. He's an elephant frat boy. 2/5. When Loxodon on Brohammer has a battlefield, each player drinks X, where X is your devotion to white. I love that he has devotion in this cube. That's a lot of fun. Yeah, these cards are cool.
I like how it makes everyone a drink.
Yeah.
That's not a very traditional white ability. That's the best part about it.
No, I mean, I think it is. That's how he's making the cube, is that the white is having everyone join in and having a good time together.
Oh, so that's sort of like Freddy.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
That's where Chad, the Planeswalker, is.
But I actually kind of like his power and toughness, like, better than Fanatic of Mogus if you're, you know, talking like white. Like a 2/5 is pretty solid in Booze Cube. Because it kills a lot of those booze toucher and intoxicated guys. So that's real important. I like it. Thank you to Scott Pacer, a.k.a. Booze Cube, for giving us some spoilers. Okay, so something happened this weekend with the Pro Tour. I wanted to break this up, so we did. I bought some cards. I normally stay out of it. Because I've seen these decks before. The Storm deck, like, we saw Pyromancer Ascension go from $2 to $2.50. Then back down to $2 in March 2013. Last time there was like a big modern event where stuff was breaking out. So I didn't think Pyromancer Ascension was going to hit $10 from $2. I didn't buy any. What I did buy was Past in Flames, because that was a card that a lot of people had seen going into the weekend, was probably going to do things. So when I saw it, you know, Finkel and Kai were both on the Storm deck, I'm like, all right, Past in Flames at $2 seems fine. So I ordered 11 copies from Three Kings Loot on Amazon, because I've noticed that when TCG Player sells out at like $10, you can still get them for $2 on Amazon. So what I actually have been doing is going into Google and typing a card name into Google and then clicking on shopping, and it just brings up all kind of stuff. All these crazy websites you would never find. Like, I was finding $10 Transmute artifacts when they were sold out for $50 on Star City. Like, it's just literally go to Google. I don't know what made me think to do that. But anyway, I went, I typed Past in Flames into Google, hit find. It's like, hey, we got $2 copies. So I bought 11 copies from Three Kings Loot on Amazon, and I got an email saying, hey, we are sending you 7. We don't have 11. What happened was somebody else bought a playset. Now, a lot of stores are set up on Crystal Commerce. Crystal Commerce is an inventory management system. You put on there how many copies you have, and you can say, all right, send this to eBay using the eBay template, send this to Amazon, send this to TCG Player, send this to my store's personal website. So you can have one inventory and have it on all those different places to sell the cards. If someone buys it, it takes it out of your Crystal Commerce inventory. The problem we're seeing is there is a little bit of a delay sometimes. So they had 11 copies in Crystal Commerce. Somebody bought 4 on TCG Player. About 5 minutes later, I come along and I buy 11 copies. They only have 11 copies total. So what they did is they sent 4 copies to the other person. Not a problem. Sent me an email saying, hey, we can only send you 7. We're real sorry. That's a little bit different from stores that say, hey, we noticed that Past in Flames went from $2 to $10, and we're not sending them to you, and you can die in a fire, which some stores had been doing. And, you know, we as a cast weren't big fans of that, but, you know, the stores are within their rights legally to do that. He didn't cancel my order. He just said, look, this happened with Crystal Commerce. I think with a lot of new people, new to speculation, that are maybe doing their first specs on this Pro Tour, some of their orders happened. They're like, I'm sorry, you bought a playset? I don't have the playset. Somebody else bought it first on another site, and people were thinking, oh, you just want to jack the price up and resell it. That's not always the case. Sometimes Crystal Commerce has a little bit of a delay built in, And if it's, you know, the middle of the week and there's not a big run on Pest and Flames, fine. That 10-minute delay means nothing. But if it's down to the minute when people were watching coverage and they're like, you know what, I'm going to pull the trigger on Pest and Flames now, there's a possibility of two people trying to buy the same copies within a 10-minute period. So be a little bit patient. Don't blow up at some stores, because orders that don't get completely fulfilled or get canceled sometimes like this, that sometimes happens. It's not the store's fault. So a shout out to Three Kings Loot for doing their best, going so far as to go to LGS's to try to find me more copies of Past in Flames to fulfill the order. They're good guys, and they're not part of the problem. They could have easily said, hey, you know what, we're canceling your order because the card went up. You can just suck it. That's not what happened here, and that's not what happens in every case. So if you're new to speculation, not every time you don't get all the cards you ordered is the dealer getting greedy and trying to screw you. Sometimes that Crystal Commerce thing happens.
So how can a person decipher between the two with some telltales that, you know, may help a person figure out if they just got screwed or not?
Well, really, the size of the store matters. A lot of times what's going to happen is you ordered a playset, and they only had a playset. So they put four copies in Crystal Commerce. Someone bought a playset on TCG Player at the same time somebody bought a playset on eBay. It's really hard to tell. Like, the bigger storefronts are going to say, hey, we have a policy where we either don't send more than four copies to somebody or these went up. It's really what they say to you. If they say, look, you know, Crystal Commerce did this, most people aren't using that as an excuse, as a lie. So, you know, I tend to believe that if that's what happened. And they'll fulfill a partial order. Because Three Kings Loot's not being greedy, because they're still sending me seven copies that, you know, for $2, and they could get $70 for those, you know, those copies. So that's not what they're trying to do. So there are honest dealers out there, and they are honestly getting kind of screwed over by the technological limits of the platform they're working with. So it's not all greed out there.
That's good to know.
I do have to say, from a seller's perspective, there are some people out there who do get greedy. And I had an issue in the same, you know, I grasp, but a little bit different. On TCG Player, I had someone order 16 copies of one card and someone order 8 copies of another card. Not a problem. I always sell cards, you know, even if they go up, whatever. If I didn't catch it, it's my fault. I'm going to honor those. However, the person, well, both people in these two cases, I had a couple other people order them. They paid, whatever, not a big deal, shipped them. In these two cards cases, however, they did not go up after the weekend. So both of these people had contacted me on Sunday saying, hey, can I cancel this order? Now, as part of TCG Player Seller, I'm required to cancel the order for them because they've requested it before I shipped. However, I still lose a fee. I think, believe it's 50 cents or 30 cents or something like that, which isn't a huge deal. But when when we're talking about these people and we're talking about these sellers, it seems, you know, really scummy if the seller doesn't sell you the, you know, 16 copies you ordered. But I think there's people just as much on the other side of that who are just prematurely buying a bunch of stuff, knowing that, you know, some of it's going to go up, and then just letting the rest of it, you know, be on returns and stuff. And all you're doing is hurting the sellers by doing that. First off, if you're not going to take them, it took them out of their inventory, so they have no chance of selling them that whole weekend. And also, they get charged a fee every time you do that. And I just, like, if anyone is doing that out there, I mean, just be aware that, you know, there are people on the other end of that computer, and there are, you know, businesses trying to operate, and you really make it very inconvenient, because, A, they get pulled from inventory, and they have to be sorted back in, which takes man hours. And in addition to that, you're just costing them money otherwise. So, I guess that's my soapbox as a seller.
I completely agree. I think that's like a ripe for abuse, and that I think this is not cool. I think that maybe TCG Player needs to have some ways of figuring out people that are abusing this and being able to ban them based upon that kind of abuse or something.
Yeah, and it goes so far as it's not even necessarily between you and the person. There's times when they can contact TCG Player directly and say, hey, I want to cancel this order. It gets canceled, the money gets pulled from you, and you never had any even contact with the buyer. I've had that happen as well. So it's not even just TCG Player in particular. I'm talking about just like eBay and everything else. A lot of them have that same policy. The internet is made for buyers. It's convenient for sellers to be able to mass market your, you know, product, but as far as being a secure place, it's not made for sellers. And I think that people just, you know, do take advantage of that, but I'm hoping at least one person hears this, does this, and, you know, maybe thinks about it twice next time. Because it really is a burden on it, especially smaller stores like me, where, you know, I don't necessarily move through tons and tons of cards. So if I have these modern staples up through the weekend, and people buy them out, you know, Friday in anticipation and then tell me Sunday afternoon, hey, I don't actually want these. I may have sold those 8 copies or 16 copies of those cards.
But, yeah, correct. Like you were assuming 100% of the risk. And not only that, you don't get refunded some of the fees when the sale goes through. So that's a real bad situation for you. But at the same time, I think right now TCG Player is erring on the side of protecting buyers because that is their real customer. And it's a little unfortunate. I think the pendulum will swing back toward the middle a little bit. But for right now, what they were really dealing with was people on TCG Player just straight up not fulfilling orders. So I think they're trying to protect the people that buy on TCG Player. And the sellers are getting stiffed a little bit right now, but I think it will get figured out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely don't think that, you know, it's completely, you know, the biggest issue. However, I really notice whenever you have a major event that seems to happen at least once a weekend. But yeah, I mean, it'll be handled eventually. Like you said, they have to almost side on the err on the side of the buyer. It's just part of the way the market is. But it would be nice to see something in place that says, hey, if you do this so many times or you cancel so many orders, we're gonna, you know, ban your account, restrict your account or something. At least a tally system, you know, all it'd have to be is a 3-strike, 5-strike system, something. I just haven't heard or seen anything like that in place. So we've beaten this horse to death. What do we want to move on to?
No strong opinions. Corbin does not care.
Nope, not at all. His LGS, in fact, when someone buys a card at the counter, they don't usually return it.
It's true. When I sell a card, it is, it's gone. But I agree with what you guys are saying.
Are you playing, League of Legends right now?
I am not.
It sounds like he is. He's really involved with a bowl of ice cream right now.
That's something. He is distracted.
He's swashbuckling his mouth with ice cream.
I'm not doing that. I am, listening to your guys' opinions and learning like I do every week on our podcast.
All right. So what we're going to move into next is...
Is the market a bubble? That's a yes or no question. I'm sorry. I thought that would take up some more time. Is the market a bubble? No.
I actually have some, because this was a big discussion today, or yesterday, or a week ago by the time you get this podcast. But this run up in prices is just unsustainable. Things keep going up, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then someone else will come along and say, yeah, I mean, they're not, like, these prices are only going to go up. Like, we talk about on this cast a lot. We say, you know, this card's only going to go up in the future. Where people come in and say, well, that's what they said about the housing market, too, and look what happened there. So, the major difference is that Magic is not just a game of cards that you play a game of Magic with. It is a collector's game. It is a collectible card game. And that matters. Like, if you look at old cards that are expensive, what somebody paid for that old card actually does matter. If somebody's argument was, you know, hey, if you reset prices, would you have $70 fetch lands or something like this? But like part of a very important part of Magic that goes untalked about is the consumer confidence that their cards will be worth something. And that's a real thing. The collectibles market is not, you just can't compare it to an economic market because it's different. I mean, you look at, you know, famous old baseball cards and people decide what it's, you know, quote, worth or not worth, and they look at what it sold at the last auction, and they use that as a baseline for the next time they auction it. And Magic's very much the same way. And these markets operate outside of, you know, traditional economic models. I mean, the collectibles market is its own thing. So what somebody paid for something actually does matter. So they really, when you're talking about standard cards, stuff that's massively in print, people want it to play for standard, well then yes, you know, that. When a card hypes up in the first 2 weeks and drives up to a really, you know, high price level, you can call that a bubble. But when you look at something like Fetchlands or Power or, you know, these old collector's cards, they're not in a bubble because that's what the market of collectors and players has shown that they're willing to pay. Like, it is, people have been saying that Legacy is in a bubble for many, many years, and it just keeps going up because people care that their dual lands are worth money and they don't want to sell them for less than a certain amount because they paid a certain amount. And that's the difference. Like if you look at a bubble, say with the housing market, you know, if somebody pays something for their house, then they can't make a payment on it. That house gets put back on the market at a reduced price. That doesn't happen with collector's items. People can just choose to keep them. And that's why the prices are not going to fall on these older collector type things. You know, sure there are individual bubbles when, you know, a card spikes, like, you know, Teferi was a one of in a modern deck and all of a sudden it gets bought out across the internet or Azusa or something like that. You have these individual cards that are in bubbles, but the market as a whole is not.
So I think something that has both helped and hurt the market is the ability of individuals to sell on TCG Player. Now, eBay was something that people have had as long as there's been an internet, but it was not as easy to look at a page on eBay and see how many copies there were of Azusa for sale total on eBay, how many sold for what price. TCG Player is so indexable and so just at a glance, this is how many copies are left, that I think that's hurt the market a little bit when people are like, oh no, there's only 10 copies. When there was 10 copies all week. Like there were 40 copies of Azusa the whole week. And then people are like, Azusa's getting played on camera. How many copies are in TCG Player? Oh my god, only 40 left. So people started to panic. But TCG Player has helped the market immensely because it has served as a pressure relief valve because there are people in direct competition with each other. If there are 40 copies of Azusa on Star City and 40 copies on TCG Player, those 40 copies on Star City are all getting sold for the same price until Star City says, all right, let's lower the price to move these, or all right, I think we can jack this price. On TCG Player, you have 10 people with 4 copies each, and one guy's going to list them for $20, and another guy's going, you know what, I want mine to sell first, I'm listing mine for $19.50. There's competition there, and that has made the markets really efficient, and it's also had, you know, competition is good for the buyer. So TCG Player really has made this more of a buyer's market. So as much as it is to just easy to buy out TCG Player and say, oh, look, there are no copies, TCG Player has also encouraged that competition in the marketplace that has kept prices even lower than they could be. Because if it was just one store with the power to buy out the internet, Azusa would be a $40 card, and there would be nothing anyone could do about it. So, yeah, I don't think it's a bubble because, like, bubbles burst because there's no pressure relief valve. And I think TCG Player and Card Shark and eBay are the perfect pressure relief valves because Azusa's not going to stay at 30 because everybody's not going to say, we're going to hold the line at 30. It's going to take 10 seconds for some guy to say, screw it, $29, out the door. You know? So the fact that there's so much competition means that it's not a bubble. It's not going to burst because there's always going to be competition. And as long as one person doesn't have all the copies, people are going to have incentive to get them to players.
And people are scared of this giant run up in prices, and I get it. It is, you know, when you see things just continually go up and up, you wonder, where is it going to stop? And that's a totally rational response to it. But what I think a lot of people don't consider is just the fact that there's a set amount, a lot of these cards on the market, and Matt, again, 2013, the numbers were released recently, grew at a giant rate. And you're just adding more and more people who want these cards. And, you know, if you quote-unquote reset the market, I do believe most of these would end up there because there are just this many people coming in who want to play them. And the reason there's run-ups in prices instead of just stable prices is because, like, one, Modern is an exploring format. Two, we're in this period now where it's getting a lot of press, and is this long run up to Modern season is just bringing these cards to where they, you know, will likely stay because of this influx of people. If Magic was going through a decline in player growth, I think the prices would similarly fall off. I mean, but it's not just about whether or not such and such card is seeing this much play or it's up this percentage. Everything that always comes back to the number of people who are playing Magic, and that number is still growing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and it's not going to stop. I mean, we have the upcoming movie. They're obviously trying to push more towards, you know, public relations just in general, rather than just focusing on the people who are already playing Magic or the people who are maybe playing Magic casually and getting them more competitive. Now they're branching out and saying, hey, anybody who's into fantasy or into science fiction, you know, this is something you should be looking at. And I don't see an end in sight, and it's certainly, you know, it's not on the decline.
The average age group, there's a very large percentage, I believe it's over 25% of people in the 18 to 25 demographic who play this game, and then another large group in the, you know, the 25 to 40 demographic. And you have this, not only do you have these people in college always getting into the game, but you have the second wave, the second generation of Magic players, because, you know, parents are teaching their kids the game. And like you say, we got the movie coming up. We have all this stuff. Esports is becoming a more and more accepted thing in the mainstream, a bigger deal. Magic is taking steps to put itself there and position itself as, you know, a viable esport moving forward with the pro tours and all of this stuff. And the upside is still there for Magic, and Hasbro is very bullish on it.
They're bullish on reprints. with this Magic Conspiracy, and there's Jace versus Veraska coming up.
Remand.
Remand is back. I didn't know it was $17 for you guys. That's absurd. It's only $5 on Moto.
It's this run-up that went on, I don't know how long it's been now, 6 months maybe? It went from like a $6-$7 card. Spell Snare got the reprint in Modern Masters instead of Remand. All the next thing you knew, Remand was like a $12-$13 card, and then it just crept up from there. So we don't know right now. Probably a lot of times this comes out. We know that there is Remand, but we don't know how many will be in the deck. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 2-of or something. So, you know, it's definitely going to bring the price down in the short term.
Because what happened was that the arts and the cards got spoiled on the Gatherer for all the cards from the new Jace Veraska set. So we don't know the exact amount. So there's a possibility.
Actually, I found it. I have a deck list, and it looks like Remand is a 1-of.
Oh, it is here. Bam.
Oh.
Yep. I'll send you guys the link. It's actually, it wasn't earlier this afternoon, but around midnight Eastern, it looks like it went up on, it looks like Mike McArthur made an article. So it looks like Remand is a 1-of. So, Ryan and I were talking about this before the cast, and I'm starting to get a little bit more excited about this dual deck.
Future Sights in it?
Yeah, so some of the art from Modo that they're reusing on these cards looks pretty tight, and it's the first time on cardboard. Like, this is the first time that we've had Tainted Wood on the new border. It looks pretty tight, and it's a 2-of in there, so that's good. It's got the Modo Future Sight alternate art that I think is pretty cool. The new body double, that looks pretty tight. Like, a new art Jace, obviously. I don't know, man. Like, the Jace deck actually looks a lot better than the Veraska deck. Because it looks like Jace is just going to play a bunch of spirit creatures and just beat down. Or illusions, I mean. You know, get the Phantasm Mindseeker combo going.
Yeah, if you look at this deck as is, even outside of the rares and the cards of new art, look at the commons and uncommons. So many of those cards are picks now. And though they will drop off for a short amount of time, things like Jace's Phantasm are still going to be 50 cents to a dollar. We see plenty of the cards from the dual deck even just a year ago with the Izzet vs. Golgari and stuff, and those cards are already back up to at least 50 or 60% of what they were selling before that. And it takes about 2 years to get back to 100%, but sometimes it's quicker on playable cards. So.
And sometimes the first time a card is in the dual deck, like if you look at something like Wirewood Channeler, that is 4 cents on a buy list for Legions. The Wirewood Channeler from Goblins versus Elves is like 25 cents. Now, I realize they're super rare because there weren't a lot of those dual decks printed, but I think a lot of that has to do with that's the first time Wirewood Channeler was printed in the new card art, and this is the first time we've seen, like, control magic with this art. There's the Brainstorm from Jace versus Veraska. There's the Swords to Plowshares from Elspeth versus Tezzeret. Like, anytime there's, like, that's the only time you can get this art, and the only time, or the first time you can get it in the new border, like, the price actually does not go down, it actually goes up. So, I think this will make the older control magics maybe worth less, but this one could be like a 25, 30 cent card.
And this, the new Remand is pretty cool.
Yeah. I think because of the art that you're gonna still have Remand.
Yeah,
anytime somebody prefers that art, they need a 4-of, and guess what? They're a 1-of in the deck. So they're not gonna spend 80 bucks on a playset of Remands, they're going to want to trade for them. And, I said before the cast I wanted to play a game. Now we know Remand is a 1-of. So what do we think the price of Remand is going to be in 3 months?
I say 10 to 12.
Now, let's do a $1 amount, and whoever is the closest.
$10.
TCG Mid. TCG Mid in three months.
On the original?
Yes. Yes, on the original. But it's just going to do the price of a Ravnica Remand. Marcel says $10. Ryan?
Are we in modern PTQ season?
3 months from now, yes.
How far in?
It starts, what, at the end of May, I believe? So, you know, we're basically March, April, May, June.
Well, 3 months from today is about May 26th. So we'll say April 1st. Okay. June 1st.
15
on June 1st. I actually want to say $9.
Okay, I'm going to say, I was closer to Ryan. I'm going to say 13. I'm thinking it's not going to tank this card. Explain to us why you think it will, Jason.
Well, I think that Remand went up partially due to demand and partially due to speculation when people saw that it was not going to be in Modern Masters 1. I think my price is close to what it would be if that hadn't happened. If they hadn't reprinted Spell Snare and not Remand. Like, I realize that Remand gets quite a bit of play, but I think it gets enough play in Modern to make it a $9-$10 card. So I think the fact that that Remand is going to get reprinted is going to do two things. One, it is going to inject more copies into the market, but two, it is going to undermine that confidence that investors had that, well, it's not getting reprinted in a Modern Masters set, so we're good until Modern Masters 2. So I think those two effects will combine to bring the price down to a little bit below where it was before.
$9, you say? So that's, I mean, you're going back, yeah, to, you know, basically a year ago, because the spike came a few weeks after Modern Masters, in July, August, and then it kind of fell off, and then it's gone back up again over the last
month. Look what Soren versus Tipple did to Hellrider. Everyone's like, wow, a $10, $15 Hellrider and a $20 deck? Yeah, but no one was buying four Soren versus Tipple to get the Hellriders.
That was a standard deal, though, and that card was already on its way down during that time. It was masked by that dual deck, okay, but fine, that deck got a lot worse right at the same time.
What was that? Broken Blind Ambition? Ambition's Cost? That was the second time Ambition's Cost had ever been blackboarded, and that was a $10 card blackboarded from Starter 99. And that all of a sudden is worth dirt now, like.
Cause it was strictly for Commander and it wasn't enough there.
Okay, like, if it's a $15 card in a $20 deck, people are just gonna buy these cause, oh by the way, there's a Jace, oh by the way, there's all these other cards.
Here's my reasoning, here's my argument. I don't think there's going to be, this Remand has already been reprinted once. I don't think there's gonna be that many more added through these dual decks.
Like the F&M foil?
F&M.
Yes. Yes. You say it like that's a big deal, but it's fairly fucking easy to get F&M promos. Like, it's no more difficult than going and buying three of these decks. Like, it's not going to influence the price that much. There's only one of. Do you really want to go spend $20 when that's the only card out of there you want? The fact that there's a Jace in there is the only thing that keeps that from being, like, the other cards aren't going to be worth anything right off the bat because people are going to go buying them just for the Remands. All those cards will go up in price. It's the same thing we see with all these Commander decks. It happens after that year. But in the first, you know, month or so, it's going to be the main two cards being the Remand and the Jace that are going to carry that value. So depending on how much the Jace drops is how much the Remand can grow. And I think that Jace is, you know, already on the way down. People for some reason just never really wanted that card to be worth money. I never quite understood. It's worth, always been worth more on Moto than it has in paper. But I can see that being.
That had 30 in paper.
But I can see that being a, what, $10, $15? It hit 30 at one point, but it hasn't since it's seen just as much play. What is that in paper right now?
Well, I mean, look, exactly. It's seeing just as much play as it was when it was 30. What changed? They announced the dual deck. They announced that it was Jace versus Vraska, and everyone's like, all right, Jace isn't this safe investment that's never going to go down because it's never going to get reprinted. It did get reprinted.
Gone back up. No, Jace is back up to, like, 25.
Guys,
okay. I'm saying, I think the people that are investing in Remand just because they're like, oh, well, it's not in Modern Masters, I think that effect is real. Because I think that effect brought the price of the card up higher than when it should be, and I think it's going to make it go lower.
Okay, you made a point. We heard your point.
So let's move on. Okay, so still sticking with this topic, though, what's not in these dual decks is Abrupt Decay or Deathrite Shaman. What do you think that says? Because those were the two cards, you know, the like slam dunk Golgari cards that people said, these are that good long-term bet. And I know we've talked on here, we're still fans of Deathrite Shaman at the new price after the banning. And there's no Abrupt Decay in here either, so which people were worried about. What does that say about the, you know, the long-term viability of investing in those two cards?
I mean, I absolutely agree with it. I think by the time they do get reprinted at this point, it will be so far down the line that the price will have already gone up by that point. Like, I did think that they are giving up the short-term opportunity to get it, and once it is rotated out of Standard, I think it's going to be just like last year, where there was just some cards that, once they left Standard, they didn't really drop. Look at what Snapcaster did. It took a small dive, but then now, look how expensive it is, comparatively. I mean, you really have about 6 months to a year after it rotates out of Standard to reprint it before it's going to start going, you know, quite a ways back up, if not higher than where it was in Standard. And I don't think that's going to happen with Abrupt Decay or Deathrite. Especially Deathrite. They're not concerned about it. They just banned it in Modern. Why do they have a reason to reprint it?
That card is definitely not getting reprinted because of that.
Yeah, I don't see that for a long time. It's only in Legacy. That's the only where it's going to be.
It's still really
good. And even Abrupt Decay isn't, you know, you don't hear people going, oh my gosh, I can't get my Abrupt Decays. You know, they're what, $7, $8 a piece, something like that?
I'd like to see them get even lower. I'm going to scoop as many of those as I can at rotation.
Yeah, I'm getting on my Moto right now. That and Supreme Verdicts, when Supreme Verdicts get out of there. Like, that's what's going to be insane. All of them are pretty good. I mean, Lockdown Smiter, no, not really.
I mean, that's a Modern card to an extent. But yeah, it's obviously worse. Okay. I mean, so I guess it'll definitely be interesting to come back to Remand a few months down the line and see how it shook out.
All right. So I think we filled up the time slot that we have. So you guys want to say anything on the way out of here? I was on the SVU cast, so check that out. The SVU fan cast. Shout out to Robot Large and shout out to Proxy Guy. You can find that on Mono Deprived. I did a cast. We talked about me and, we talked about food. And so we got some good steak recipes. You want to figure out how to get down and cook the perfect steak. It was actually a really good cast. And, Proxy Guy, he knows how to get down. So check that out.
I'm proud of you for not saying SUV like you normally do.
Did I say SUV this time?
No, you didn't.
Got it right this time.
Hey, I didn't have enough drinks. What about you guys? Anything going on? Say out there, shout outs?
Shout out to Three Kings Loot for not screwing me over. And shout out to MTG Headquarters, the new home for the Jason Alt Finance article. I'm very excited to be joining the team over there, which includes Ruben Bresler, who is doing a big publicity push for that site. So check out MTG Headquarters. My second article should have gone up yesterday.
And I guess shout out to Ray for, you know, another solid Pro Tour finish.
Yes.
And that's pretty much it for me.
I'm going to give a shout out to Marshall Sutcliffe and Zach Hill for the Pro Tour coverage. I thought that they did, out of everyone there, I thought that those two did the best. You know, there were some mistakes across the board, people not knowing what cards did, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought they did a very good job calling their games and setting them up. And I personally, you know, obviously since I'm going on to joining the coverage team, I pay a lot of attention to it. And I thought the coverage at this Pro Tour took a big step forward.
I completely agree. I thought it was a lot more watchable. I think people fit their roles pretty well. There was a good flow back and forth. Zach was pretty good because he did a lot of correcting of people and had the right answers for how plays are supposed to unfold. Randy Buehler was also pretty good. He had a lot of knowledge that he was bringing.
Coverage came a really long way, and it's only moving forward, so I'm excited to see where we go.
Check us out next week. This is Brainstorm Brewery. We're out of here.
Great f***ing episode.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.